And this is Carol Steckler with Kitchen Table Politics, and we're in for a treat for the next few weeks. I've been on a leave of absence, and I'm back now. And for the next few weeks, we're going to do a program called Talkin' Trash, and it's going to be all about the dump. And I have in the studio today as my guest Paige Reed, who's the current board chair for the nonprofit that runs the dump. So first, let's listen to a little trash music here, written by Bill Steele and sung by Pete Seeger.
Mr. Thompson calls the waiter, orders steak and baked potato. He leaves the bone and gristle, and he never eats the skin. The busboy comes and takes it, with a cough contaminates it. He puts it in a can with coffee grounds and sardine tin. And the truck comes by on Friday, carts it all away. 1,000 trucks just like it are converging on the bay. Oh, garbage, 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 garbage. We're filling up the seas with garbage.
Garbage, garbage, garbage.
What will we do when there's no place left to put all the garbage?
Garbage, garbage, garbage,
garbage,
garbage, garbage, garbage.
Mr. Thompson starts his Cadillac and winds it down the freeway track, leaving friends and neighbors in a hydrocarbon haze. He's joined by lots of smaller cars, all sending gases to the stars, there to form a seething cloud that hangs for 30 days. And the sun licks down into it with an ultraviolet tongue, turns it into smog, and then it settles in our lungs. Oh, garbage,
garbage,
garbage. We're filling up the skies with garbage. What will we do when there's nothing left to breathe but garbage?
Garbage,
getting home and taking off his shoes, he settles with the evening news while the kids do homework with the TV in one ear. While Superman for the thousandth time sells talking dolls and conquers crime, dutifully they learn the date of birth of Paul Revere. In the papers there's a piece about the mayor's middle name. He gets it read in time to watch the all-star bingo game. Oh, garbage,
garbage, garbage,
garbage. We're filling up our minds with garbage.
Garbage, garbage, garbage.
What will we do when there's nothing left to read, and nothing left to need, and nothing left to watch, nothing left to touch, nothing left to walk upon, and nothing left to talk upon, nothing left to see, and nothing left to be but garbage,
garbage, garbage, garbage, garbage.
And there you have it on Talkin' Trash, our theme song sung by Pete Seeger, Garbage. So, good morning, Paige.
Good morning, Carol. Thanks for having me.
Oh, this is great to have you here. And, you know, I'm going to start with just my own personal brief experience with the dump, which started in 1977 when the dump was run by the county, and there was a landfill just south of where, in a big, huge field, just south of where Crowfoot Farm is now. The Shugrins lived there then, Peter and Sandra Shugrin. And that we just took our garbage there and dumped it like they do all over the world still. Dumped it out of our cans and stuff, and they took care of it. There was no concept of recycling or anything. And I am, from there, going to turn it over to Paige so he can tell us what's happened since then. Paige.
Well, first a little background, Carol. As I understand it, the world wants everyone to produce less garbage, no question about that, more recycling, because we have to live with that garbage in landfills for years and years and years. One of the problems that that puts a disposal site in, whether it's a private garbage company or a public utility, is that the price per can of garbage actually goes up when you produce less garbage. So it's kind of a catch-22. And here's why the price goes up. A garbage dump, like any company, has both variable costs and fixed costs. A good example of a variable cost is the price that the utility or private company has to pay per can to get rid of the garbage. And it also has fixed costs. And a good example of fixed costs is the salary and overhead to operate the dump, whether one can comes in or a million cans come in. The problem you can see then is that when volumes of garbage go down, which again is a good thing for the planet, when volumes of garbage go down, the cost to the utility or private company goes up because they still have to spread those fixed costs of salary and overhead over all the cans of garbage they get. So in the long term, I think we're going to see the direction that garbage dumps have to go is either to raise the price per can that they charge us, the customer, up and up and up, or find a different way to pay for the expense of garbage. One of the ways, of course, is to use a property tax like schools, fire departments, police departments, libraries, so that it's not dependent on how much garbage you produce. And we can get past that catch-22 of price per can going up and up and up as we all do the right thing and produce less and less garbage. So that sort of sets the scene for the predicament that the county found themselves in back in around 2009. The county, of course, was operating garbage dumps countywide. The problem with Lopez being the smallest, after all, we're only 15% of the county's population, so we only produce 15% of the county's garbage. The problem is that we were, as the smallest garbage dump, certainly the most expensive to operate. The county found themselves operating in the red for several years because of the expenses that the smallest dump, Lopez, incurred when it's run by the county, which has more overhead than a private company, of course, with the additional jobs and additional requirements that a county has. So at some point, the county tried to pass a property tax bill, and it failed by a margin of 2-1 for the voters of San Juan County. Shortly after that, the county said, okay, that's it. We're going to get out of the garbage business and turn it over to a private hauler. And the designated private hauler that's approved for San Juan County is, of course, San Juan Sanitation. Well, Lopez Island said, wait a minute, we're not interested in the possible negative sides of that. More garbage trucks on Lopez Island, possibility of raccoons because you got to put your garbage cans out on the county road for pickup. And probably the hottest button was the commingled recyclables versus what Lopez really wanted to do, which is self-separate the recyclables so that they can get sold for profit. So Lopez went to
Excuse
work.
Excuse me, Paige, but yeah. Did you say this was also part of the plan to close the Lopez dump site?
Oh, absolutely.
So I just want to be clear that it was going to disappear.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, Carol. The plan that the county came up with when the property tax countywide failed by the 2-1 margin was to not only turn over garbage collection to the private hauler San Juan Sanitation, but to do so by closing all the dumps. And Lopez said not only no, but heck no, and began with Sarah Rabel, Mila Prince, and Ed Kilduff, and others, starting the movement called Take Back the Dump. So Take Back the Dump began as a group of citizens on Lopez wanting to at least look at alternatives, and hence the name SWAP, Solid Waste Alternatives Project. One of the alternatives that they looked at early on was to have a group here on the island that had some official standing take over operation of the dump, and they turned to the Port District. The Port spent quite a bit of time and money looking at the possibility of the Port District legally running a dump, and unfortunately found that that was not going to be possible. So after a lot of time and money and effort, the Port District had to bow out, and that threw it back to us, Lopezians, to carry forward from there. We found through the county prosecutor, Randy Gaylord, that there was an option for us. There was already the possibility of creating a solid waste disposal district. There were at that time two other solid waste disposal districts in Washington State. Neither was organized to do what we wanted to do, take over our own dump, run it with self-separated recycling and self-hauling of garbage and recyclables by you and me to the dump. So we began in earnest as a group.
Do you know where those sites were? I'm just curious.
I do, yeah. One of them was down, I believe, in Thurston County in southwestern Washington State. And the other was in northwestern, and it was, I believe, the Bellingham area. But when I contacted the managers of each of those solid waste districts, I found that their reasons for forming a solid waste disposal district under the laws of the state of Washington were very different than ours. They don't actually handle garbage. They don't handle recyclables. They had financial reasons and legal reasons to establish a solid waste disposal district. So there we were once again, Lopez Island on its own, establishing a solid waste disposal district for entirely different reasons than anybody else in the state. Although
that's a great story.
It's kind of interesting. Randy Gaylord, as our county prosecutor, was very helpful in formation of the district, and it is a story that is the legal construct by which we operate today. We're a solid waste disposal district. We were established in summer of 2012 in preparation for takeover of the dump 1 January 2013.
And a part of that was to create a nonprofit. Is that correct?
That is, in the sense that the district is not legally a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. It's a public utility. But in order to be able to accept donations and use them wisely, we needed a nonprofit structure. So we have a second organization, SWAP, Solid Waste Alternatives Project, and that is the nonprofit arm of your dump.
No, I didn't even know this. Thank you.
There we go.
Wow, this is great. Okay. Yeah.
So that's a thumbnail sketch of how we got from the county saying they're going to get out of the garbage business to Lopez doing something none of the other islands have done, and that is take control of their dump, have separated recyclables that get sold to offset the cost of garbage, and the rest of the county is slowly but surely being turned over to San Juan Sanitation, which does not offer separated recycling, only commingled recycling. It's just not practical to have the garbage trucks do anything other than collect two things: A, garbage; B, commingled recycling.
Yep. So now let's go into one of the important functions, and I know as a board, so you're the board of the legal oversight, I don't know, of the Solid Waste District.
That's right, and there is one note to add to that. The state law says that the county in which any solid waste disposal district resides, and of course we reside in San Juan County, has to have a little county oversight over that district. And yep, the way that that's accomplished is that the county council members take off their hat as county council people, and they put on the hat as the governing board of the Lopez Solid Waste Disposal District, and they do that periodically, and for convenience, they do it right at the beginning or end of a county council meeting, and their job is to approve our annual budget, approve the members of our managing board.
Mm-hmm.
That's the
you're called a managing board.
We're called a managing board.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And there are five of us. And
who are you?
The individuals are the most wonderful group that I could ever work with. Larry Eppenbach is our secretary. Bruce Kreps is our chief financial officer. And two other members at large are Sandy Bishop and Dan Post. And I
do have to, in full disclosure, I'm going to second that. It is an incredible board that I also have peripheral connection with, although more than peripheral with Larry and Paige, but because I'm the volunteer coordinator for the dump as of a month and a half ago. And this whole interview was really enlightening for me as well as you. So I really appreciate this great idea to talk trash.
It's kind of fun. It's what we live and breathe. And the five of us on the managing board are all volunteers. And the real engine behind the operation of the dump is our two employees, Neil Hansen, who's been there 22 years, as we all know and love, on Lopez, and Bob Chanka, who's been there 7 years working hand-in-hand with Neil. Those are the two folks you see along with the volunteers. And I want to just stop right here and acknowledge the real engine behind the engine that runs the Lopez dump are the 80-plus volunteers that, with the five volunteer board members and two employees, Neil and Bob, make it happen.
Absolutely, and I want to be really, the listeners to be really clear that the volunteers are a very important part of the business plan. Without it, there is no way they could, we, all of us who voted for this and the citizens and taxpayers who will continue to support it, there's no way that it could continue to run without those volunteers as part of the business plan.
Amen. I want to second that, and I also want to point out we need more volunteers. Summertime brings changes to the island, as we all know, and some of our regular volunteers are either off-island or committed to other activities on the island. Farming is certainly one, and are unable to put in the commitment that they do during the winter. So any of you who are sitting on the fence thinking, gosh, I've seen those folks in the orange vests. It's not just Neil and Bob, it's a bunch of volunteers, and I'd like to know more about it. You can always go to our website, lopezsolidwaste.org, and find out more.
And you can call me, Carol Steckler, at 2138, and I can get you signed up to work at the next shift at the dump or the one a month from then. So please make a call and tell your friends and neighbors. And while this program is being broadcast, you can also call in with questions to ask Paige. And the number here is 468-3656, and we welcome your calls. Well, I'll have to warn you, I've not taken calls live on the air for the many years I've lived here. I've just held the phone up to the mic. So this is new territory, but I'm pretty sure we can navigate it somehow. So let's go back to the dump. And
right.
I know one of the areas I want you to go into, but you may not have finished what you're thinking of, because I really want to dig a little deeper into the business plan and finding markets for recycling, I know, has been a really important part of what you've done. And could you, if you were finished with what you were saying, could you tell us a little bit about the markets you found and the changing nature? I understand plastics, markets going down because China's not taking it. Just tell us this whole story.
You bet. Well, the way which we all remember of 4 or 5 years ago is that we separated recyclables at the dump into, I'm going to guess, 4, 5, or 6 different items. We now take 22 different items, and this is largely the credit to Neil Hansen for researching those markets when we opened and making sure that there was either as large a price paid to us for recyclables, such as paper and plastics, or as small a charge to us if we have to pay to get rid of it. And a great example is glass. There's a glut of glass in the country right now. Even if you're operating a dump on the mainland near Seattle, if you're out on an island, you've got to pay the ferry fee, the truck diesel fuel, the driver's wages to get the glass to a place which If it's other than Seattle, they don't pay you, they charge you. And that is one reason we're currently looking into alternative locations for taking care of our glass. Stay tuned for that. But
yeah.
But to talk about some of the other recyclable materials and the up or downs, steel goes up or down every week, and that is very heavy material to transport, so we take the price of steel pretty seriously. The recycling of plastics has changed in the last 10 years to the point where today almost all our plastics, bottles and sheet plastic, bags, that sort of thing, all go to China, where I assume it gets made into the goods that get sent back to the United States that are partially responsible for our lousy trade imbalance. The so-called green fence has been erected between the U.S. and China as far as our shipping our plastic bottles and recyclable materials over to China. And here's what I learned just this morning talking to one of the folks that buys our plastics. He explained that this green fence is a very serious attempt to make sure that what we send to China really is recyclable and not going to wind up in the landfill over there, either because the food is not properly rinsed out of the container or the containers get put into the wrong bin. So it really boils down to you and me putting that plastic water bottle into the bin Neil has set up for plastic water bottles and not putting it into the box next to it that's for yogurt containers. It carries all the way to China. When we bail that load and it winds up contaminated with food or contaminated with materials from the wrong bin, the entire 1,000-pound bale, and believe me, it takes a whole bunch of water bottles to make a 1,000 pounds baled up. I believe Neil told me it took 26 of those big cardboard totes that you throw the plastic water bottle into to make one bale. So when that bale gets sold, and we sell ours currently over in Mount Vernon, and at some point the inspector who's going to buy it and send it to China finds out it smells or it's got the wrong plastics in it, the whole bale becomes landfill. What a crying shame that is.
Holy cow. You know, how many people on Lopez Island even know that and understand that? I don't even know the people that recycle understand the deeper story.
You know, it is an interesting story. There's a wonderful map that was shown at Earth Day at the school made by Glenn Maxson, who is one of the board members of SWAP, SWAP, our nonprofit branch. And I was amazed. This was a world map of where Lopez's garbage goes, where Lopez's recyclables go. I did not know that almost all the aluminum cans go to Georgia. I didn't know that most of the paper stays fairly local, with a lot going to Port Townsend Paper. And I especially didn't know that virtually all our plastics go to China. So,
wow. Where is that map now?
That map was last seen at Earth Day, and I think it's probably at Glenn Maxson's home.
We got to get that map out.
We got to get that map.
It should be at the dump.
It should be at the dump where we can all see it.
On the wall. We got a lot of wall space.
We do. And
all
except
right.
for today, it should be in front of you and I, Carol, so we
I
can
know.
Point to it and our
exactly.
listeners can visualize.
This is great.
We could do audio geography.
I know.
Take your map of the U.S., find Lopez, find Georgia. Now go about, what, 10,000 miles to your left to China?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we might do that still. I mean, it's never too late. I find it fascinating. Don't stop now. Tell us more about the recycling markets.
Well, those are the biggest. And I think that the biggest eye-opener for me, once I got some feel for the prices, and I'll give you some current numbers for today. Mixed paper is largely a wash. It costs us 2 cents a pound to move it to Mount Vernon where we sell it, and we get 2 cents a pound for it. So it's largely a wash.
And has that been pretty constant, or do you have a figure that was different, say, a month ago? Or
That price in the 6 months we've operated the dump has only changed by about half a cent per pound.
Did it go up or down?
It's gone flip-flop, where newsprint was 1 3/4 pennies per pound and mixed paper was 1.5. It's now flip-flop for some reason. Newsprint is about 1.5 and mixed paper is about 2 cents. So those sound like small fractions of a penny, but when you're only getting 2 cents, half a cent is 25% of the
deal. Yeah, give us a clue about how much mixed paper we haul off the island.
Boy, I don't know the tonnage off the top of my head, but it's certainly thousands of pounds per month. I do know this. The heaviest of our commodities in any bulk is glass, and we move about 10 tons of glass per month off the island. So you can see how serious that is. And we're paying $60 a ton to dispose of the glass to recyclers. Don't want to use the word dispose. It's recycling it.
Yeah.
And that's after we pay another $40 in diesel fuel, wages, and ferry fares to get that 10 tons to the mainland. So it's over $100 a ton to get rid of it, and we're doing 10 tons a month. That's $1,000 a month I'd rather find an alternative for. And we will find an alternative. I'm confident of that. A lot of sharp people working on it. Stay tuned.
Yeah, I hope the viewers are willing to go with us into the weeds, because I'm really interested in this. And it's all part of the financial plan that you and I as taxpayers in San Juan County, but particularly on Lopez Island, because we are the only taxpayers paying for this facility, that we need to understand this so we understand our own dump story, the same as we're taxpayers for the school, and we're all interested in the school's story and how do they spend their money. So we need to know, and I know it's a new arena to start thinking about pennies per pound and 3/4 pennies per pound. But, you know, we don't have to know. It's my belief we don't have to know the specifics of the poundage, but we have to have the concept that this is a changing market, and there are, and not only in price, but in even who takes things. So I'm going to let, there's more to this story. He's just begun, folks. So just hang on to your seat, because the recycling path is really amazing.
Well, just to continue on with you mentioned the pricing and how they change. The eye-opener for me is that the price of these commodities is not fixed. It varies weekly, and there are folks who follow those markets. And of course, on Lopez, we don't have as many choices of where to truck the materials to recycle them on the mainland. If we were in Seattle, we could follow the price and move the trucks to wherever the best price was. But nonetheless, the prices do go up and down weekly, if not monthly. And they go up and down enough that you need to seriously think about where you're going to take it. All at the same time, we try to have a consistent setup of our bins, a consistent list of what we take and what we don't take, because it's much easier if you arrive at the dump and you can expect a strong, consistent layout to the facility as to where you're going to take your recycling. In the end, it means less time for you at home sorting if you know exactly what we're going to take and where. So we've got, on the one hand, the desire to have a fixed, well-organized, consistent layout with a consistent list of objects that we take. And at the other hand, you've got buyers jacking the price up and down weekly. So we, for instance, can often get a little better price going to a bigger city. Bellingham offers better prices for every item, especially steel, than does Mount Vernon. But Bellingham has the additional time for the driver, the additional diesel fuel to get up the road. And with the ferry schedule the way it is, it can mean the difference between not just the extra driving time to get to Bellingham, but you may well miss the ferry you planned on, and boom, all of a sudden your 5 hours got added onto the trip maybe only an hour and a half of which is needed for the extra drive, and now you're paying for somebody to wait in the ferry line. So it's a juggling act. Stay tuned. We will often be fine-tuning where we take our recyclables, but in the same breath, I want to just add, we're going to try to keep the list of what we take and where the bin's located as consistent as we can to make it simpler for you when you get to the dump to recycle.
Well, I'm going to take a brief break here, but stay tuned, because one of the biggest recycling programs that is just yesterday, I think it was, we got great news about is E-Waste Washington. Is that what it's called?
That's what it's called.
And Buffalo Industry, which we've been doing for not a really long time. So stay tuned. One is for textiles, clothing in good shape, and then the other is for electronic equipment, including televisions and printers. So stay tuned so you can find out what's happening. But I'm going to do a station ID. This is KLOI-LP, Lopez Island, Washington, 102.9 FM. This is Carol Steckler with Paige Reed. I'm from Kitchen Table Politics, a regular show at 11 o'clock on Thursday mornings. And we are talking trash here, Paige and I. And I'd also like to say that all views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the host and guest and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of KLOI or our parent nonprofit, GIVE, the Gathering of Island Voices and Expressions. We are, by being on this microphone, telling you about our dump, filling the mission of this radio station. And we will get to the mission. Maybe that's a good thing to go out on. Of both SWAP, and I'm not sure if there's a mission statement for the solid waste facility or not, but we'll get to those. Let's go back to recycling. And I don't know, what do you want to pick up first? Buffalo Industries or e-waste?
Well, let's talk about e-waste. It's the most exciting. The state of Washington has a unique program that is to make sure television sets and old computer monitors don't wind up in the landfill. I think you've all seen it at the dump. Someone buys a new flat screen TV or a new flat screen computer monitor, and what are you going to do with that old clunker that is as big front to back as it is left, right, or top
and
down?
And heavy.
Average weight 40 pounds, and we've seen some 70-pounders. Well, they wind up getting thrown into the garbage dumpster, where, of course, you have to pay for that. And then, in order to compact our dumpsters to haul as much of an efficient, economically viable load, we compact them with the backhoe, tamping, Neil calls it. That's a necessary step. But guess what happens to that old TV or monitor? It explodes. And a TV and a monitor or a computer monitor going to the landfill is even worse. There's all that broken glass, and gosh, what's the material, Carol, that's in a TV that's bad for you? I'm going to say mercury, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, I'm sure lead, I would guess.
Maybe it's lead. Anyway,
or both.
It's just a crying shame that we crush TVs and put them in the landfill. So the state of Washington some time back established what they call the e-waste program. And they will actually pay us a certain number of pennies per pound to collect TVs, computer monitors, computers themselves, including laptops, not just desktops, and send them to an authorized recycler here in Washington State. Our nearest one is Linwood. There's another in Seattle. Those recyclers, when I say authorized, have just the right requirements placed on them. They have to recycle 95% by weight of what comes in their door, which is a pretty high target to hit, trust me.
Yeah.
And they're not allowed to do the things we hear about in horror stories in the paper, where recyclers in third world countries, for economic reasons, have recycling facilities that are terrible environmentally and terrible health hazards. You've all heard the stories of kids walking around in these recycling plants in third world countries where to reclaim the valuable metals like gold and silver cadmium and mercury, that the facilities don't have adequate ventilation and they don't have adequate personal protection. And because it's a simple job, often kids are used. And the kids wind up walking around barefoot in puddles of caustic materials that are just a gigantic health hazard. So the recyclers to be authorized in Washington State to handle e-waste have to comply with at least those two requirements. They have to recycle 95% by weight of what comes in the door, and they cannot ship the materials for further recycling to third world countries where the health protections are, because of economic reasons, close to zero. So that's good news. But there's even better news.
How is that program paid for?
You bet. It is not paid for out of the Washington State taxpayers' pocket.
Yes.
Washington
Hallelujah.
State says that if a manufacturer of a TV or a computer monitor or a computer or a laptop wants to sell their product in Washington State, they have to contribute a certain dollar sum to an organization that is that runs the program for the state of Washington. This organization is a consortium of electronic manufacturers that do business in Washington State. That's where they get the money to pay us to collect TVs, computer monitors, computers, and laptops. And that's a wonderful program. That's a win-win for the people of
Absolutely.
Washington State.
Is there any other state that's doing that you know of?
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if there were a few others. On the other hand, I wouldn't be surprised if Washington State was out there in front, leading the pack with our spirit of just do it.
Yeah. Well, that'd be interesting. We'll find out. Stay tuned. Always stay tuned. We're just going to be talking trash for the next 25 minutes here, and then we'll be back next week with another guest. Talking trash. So now, Buffalo, or did you want to talk to printers?
Let me just mention that. We have been beating the streets for months to try to find what to do with that old printer. Printers these days just don't have a home. When you buy a new one and the old one needs to go out of your home, they've been also winding up in the landfill. And they've never been that attractive to recyclers because they don't contain much more than just plastic. They don't have much of value in them to make it attractive to a recycler. But the organization that runs the e-waste program for the state of Washington is working closely with Lopez Island to accept on a basis of, they're not going to pay us, but they're not going to charge us, basically a wash basis, to take our printers. And that's just wonderful. And this kind of thing comes from a conversation that one of us had with the organization's head. And their comment is kind of fun. They said, Well, Paige, how many printers are you talking about? You're little old Lopez Island. Have you really got a lot of printers? And I said, we're talking about 20 to 50 a year. And they said, oh, for gosh sakes, just throw them on top of the TVs and monitors. We can't pay you like we pay you for the televisions and monitors and computers, but we'll take them and we won't charge you, and we will run them through the same recycling chain that we use. That's not only environmentally helpful, but taking care of the health risks to kids in third world countries. So that's just a wonderful thing for us to hear on Lopez. Bring your printers.
And all the equipment that goes with them, right?
The list of peripherals we're still nailing down,
okay.
But the way it's phrased until further notice is we'll accept printers and computer peripherals. And I personally would like to see us keep beating the streets for a place to take the other electronics that get brought into the take it or leave it, the most notable being stereos, DVD players, VCR players. My gosh, we don't save VCRs anymore now that the DVD is here. So what do you do with that old VCR player? So we'll be looking for a place to get rid of in an environmentally and healthy way the VCR players that we get at Take It or Leave It. So
Well, I hope none of you are in this situation, but we have to go home now and go to the bottom of our garbage can and take out the printer we put in there 3 days ago.
Okay, there you go.
But do it. It'll be worth it. It's worth it to the environment. It's worth it to you. It won't cost you to dump it, and they're not light.
Yeah.
So, Buffalo Industries.
Sure. We get a whole bunch of clothing at the Take It or Leave It, and thank you to all the donors who bring things to Take It or Leave It.
And those of you who come and take it away.
Yeah.
We love you, all of you.
So an obvious question is, do we get more clothing than people take away? And the answer is overwhelmingly yes. We wind up with way too much clothing at the Take It or Leave It.
Especially women's clothing, I have to say.
Yes, yes. So one of the ways that we are able to, to not have to put that extra clothing into the garbage is to find a place that will take it and better yet pay us to offset the cost of transportation. Buffalo Industries is an interesting company down in Seattle. They're over 100 years old and they've been taking used clothing for that entire 100 years. So just as a side note, try to imagine what they were doing in the early part of the 1900s when life was just a lot different as far as trucking materials for reuse and recycle. I'm not sure we even had those words then. But Buffalo Industries currently accepts our usable clothing, which means not badly torn and not moldy and not excessively dirty.
Not stained.
Not stained beyond usability. And they take that clothing and sell it to third world countries. They pay us 9 cents a pound when it's baled up and transported to their facility in Seattle, and then turn around and sell it for use overseas. They occasionally, not currently, but occasionally they actually buy rags. And when the material is not usable clothing because there's a leg torn off the pair of jeans or a blouse with one arm, they go ahead and use that material for commercially sold rags that they produce and sell. They dye them all purple or blue, and in some cases red, bale them up, and I believe they sew an edge on it so you don't get tatters, and that's how they get their rags. And finally, if a material is not usable clothing and it's also not usable in the manufacture of a shop rag, for instance, the material used in some clothing that does not absorb fluids very well at all, like a satin, they then sell those materials to the manufacturers of carpet underlayment.
Wow.
What a win-win. Yeah. Talk about reusing.
You know, that tells us we're actually not quite sorting accurately at Take It or Leave It. Thanks a lot, Paige.
You
not
bet.
Only do I have to go through my own garbage can, I have to go through Take It or
go
Leave
through
It.
Your Take It or Leave It. Well,
it's not garbage. It's rags now, but some of them should go in that other pile.
Yeah, and let me emphasize, right now they're not paying us for rags. If we spend the money to transport them to Seattle, they will take them at no charge. Neil is looking into more local possibilities for places that will take our rags at no charge, especially if it's on the route we have to take garbage or recyclables. So bring your used, usable clothing that functions to the Take It or Leave It.
And it's not stained, soiled, or torn. I mean, we really are being careful, because one of the things we haven't talked about, although you touched on it briefly, is if we abuse any of these markets with too many goods that don't fit their criteria, the price goes up or they refuse to take it. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. I was talking with one of our buyers over in Mount Vernon today, and the individual said that the criteria of what a certain plastic is, and you know our bins are necks and no necks. Anything with threads is a necked container. Anything with no threads at all is what we call a no-neck container, that if that baled commodity smells because food was left in one of the containers or is contaminated with containers that belong in the other bin, two things happen. First, the buyer puts us on a list of customers to possibly just cut off, and that depends on how the abuses go. And the second is they just tell us to get it out of there. Well, can you imagine after we spend the money to bail up 26 totes of plastic bottles, put it on the truck, drive it to the mainland, pay the ferry fare, pay the diesel fuel, get it to Mount Vernon. If that buyer has to say to us, get it out of here, I have no use for it, and I'm certainly not going to pay you for it. Now we have to put it back on the truck, take it back to at least the garbage dump, pay the fee to dump it as landfill, and in the end, that material that we all worked hard to recycle winds up in the landfill. That's not what we want to have happen.
Right. Let's go to another way. I'd say we have another at least 10 minutes, and this is perhaps one of the least understood and areas, and that is when you bring something to take it or leave it now, you'll take it to the desk, and volunteers will go through it. And if you bring large items, you'll sign a little book with your name and phone number, and you'll be given a number, and that number will be on those items. And if they don't move in a couple of weeks, you will pay the dump fee. That has to do with everything Paige has been talking about. And the history of beginning to understand that is because all of the trash went into the county under the county coffers for however many years that was. When Take It or Leave It came into being, there was no separate allocation of the amount of trash that Take It or Leave It generated or paid for. Guess what? Now we pay for all of it. So suddenly it turns out, because we're paying attention, and when the move happened and in January, and we needed to sort what was there and what wasn't usable, much of it went into trash. Not all. I don't want to overstate that. But why don't you talk about that, and then the last move we made and the amount of monies that's cost that actually had not been on anyone's radar and wasn't in the budget.
Right. Well, if you look at the background, the county was running the dumps throughout the islands. And again, Lopez was only 15% of the garbage. And the Take It or Leave It produced garbage such that it was amounting to somewhere between $15,000 and $25,000 a year, not in chargeable fees, but just in the flat-out trucking and disposal expense of that garbage. And here's how it happens. Somebody well-meaning will bring something to the Take It or Leave It, and with no one there to screen it in the old days, they would, of course, just leave it for Neil to screen when he got time. And Neil was putting in with Ona roughly 3 hours every day. Bob Chanka putting in almost that amount every dump day. At the end of the day, on their own time, sorting out materials at the Take It or Leave It. And that produced somewhere in the neighborhood of what we call a tippler, a 4-cubic-yard tippler. That's one of those big metal boxes that looks like a dumpster but has no top. That amount of garbage, 1.5 of those a day at peak, would cost $25,000 a year to dispose of. And I want to emphasize, that's not in lost charges if we had charged for it. That's just the flat-out expense of disposing of it. There's no item in our budget for Take It or Leave It to produce garbage. So we depend heavily on the volunteer screeners to screen out things we either don't have room for or we can't take because history shows no one will ever pick them up at the Take It or Leave It and we'll be stuck with disposing of them. So that's the reason behind having all our wonderful volunteers at Take It or Leave It ask you to take something home if we don't have room for it or we cannot take it. I mean, the most notable is liquids. We cannot dispose of liquids because imagine a quart container of soap, shampoo, laundry detergent, a gallon container of laundry detergent. What happens when you tamp that in the garbage with the backhoe? Well, you know what happens. It explodes the container, it leaks out the drain pipe, not just contaminating the otherwise pristine dump at Lopez, but it dribbles along the road, and worst case, our driver gets pulled over and we get a large fine for polluting the environment on the county roads or the state highways as we haul it down Highway 20 to the dump.
Yeah.
So it's a well thought out reason that we have a list of things we can't take. Again, we either can't take them like liquids or we don't have room for them. And I think that the more we all know and think about that for a minute, the more we'll understand $25,000 at a peak of garbage generated by take it or leave it doesn't have any place in the budget, and it's not something we want in the budget.
Absolutely. Some of them are, and markets emerge, but right now there isn't a market at all for socks. And that we generate a significant number of socks, and they, in the past, have not been an item that has moved well. Maybe it's because how they were displayed. I mean, we don't know that yet. If a market emerges for that, we'll take them.
Yeah.
I've got good mated socks clean. That's going to be the bottom line, folks, until we leave this earth.
You bet.
Things have to be clothing, unless it goes in rags or well, that's about it right now. Rags has to be clean and wearable and something that you or someone you love would want to wear.
There, that's a great way to look at it. Would you give this to a friend? If not, don't bring it to the take it or leave it, because you're asking your friend to take it. And all of us have to pay for things people don't take when we don't have room for them or they're on our list of things we can't take. We have to pay for it as garbage. You know, one of the other things that we are not taking is underwear, correct?
Oh, that's correct. Yeah, right. It is. Right. There's no market for underwear. And also there's some concerns about health risks, too. I haven't delved into that at all. But that's been certainly mentioned by several volunteers.
You know, I want to just mention one of the changes that you've seen to take it or leave it in the past weeks. And that is, we shifted from folding clothing, because Neil and Ona and Stephanie Hilton and Bob Chanka were folding clothing for 1 to 3 hours at the end of every dump day as volunteers. A technique which Neil has wanted to implement for a number of years is called rummage sale style clothing. And those are the three tables that we installed about a month ago. I want to put a plug in for the Lopez School.
Yeah, their shop department.
The shop class kids built those tables, and they used a minimum of new wood by using a maximum of used lumber we had acquired from donors at the dump in the previous 6 months. And the idea behind those tables is simple. If you've got to run the take it or leave it with volunteers to avoid garbage fees and costs, then you want to minimize the amount of time that the volunteers have to do non-essential functions. And one of those is folding clothing that Neil and Ona and Stephanie and Bob were folding for years. So the concept is you have a long, skinny table, and our three tables labeled men's, women's, and children's are 4 feet wide and 16 feet long. The idea is, when new clothing comes in from a donor like you, we simply put it at the east end of those long tables. If there's not enough room, we shove all the clothing down and remove some from the west end, which we put into usable clothing to send to Seattle to Buffalo, and that makes room for the new clothing coming in. So at the east end of those tables, you'll see the latest and greatest. Check it out. And at the west end of the table, if there was something you've been watching and thinking about taking, you better grab it. Because when we need more room, the west end of the table is going away.
Yeah, that hasn't quite been implemented, but it will be very shortly, because the women's clothing table is pretty full. So now we talking about mission at the end of the show, and we're coming down to the end of this talking trash session, the first one of at least four, maybe more. And so the mission I keep hearing repeated, and I'm not sure I even have the words, is zero garbage?
Well, the concept of zero waste is...
Right.
It's simply a concept that the less landfill we as humans put into the earth, the less we're going to have to deal with the negative effects of any landfill, leaching into the water, loss of usable space, and so on. And the more we recycle and reuse instead of throwing things away, the less
or
we
have... Or buying new.
Or buying new, the less resources we tap into from the limited resources we have on this planet in terms of natural resources. So you'll see the concept of zero waste thrown around as a goal. It's part of our logo on LopezSolidWaste.org at the top of the homepage. And it may well be part of signage you see at the dump. But back to the mission statement of the dump, it's important to know that our statutory requirement put on us by the state of Washington is to dispose of Lopezians' garbage in a sanitary and safe manner. And the second, I will say, not requirement, but goal of the dump is to allow people to recycle and reuse by separating their own recyclables instead of mandatory commingled recycling. And third in our charter is to operate the take it or leave it in a responsible and environmentally healthy way to enable all Lopezians to take it or leave it. So there you go. That's our mission statement.
There we go. And gosh, thanks so much for being here, Paige. I learned so much. And as I said before, I hope you'll travel with us sometimes in the weeds. And I'm hoping, I haven't confirmed this yet, but I'm hoping our next interview will be either with Sarah Eppenbach, who I believe is chairperson for the SWAP, the Solid Waste Advisory Program. Is that what?
Solid Waste Alternatives Project.
Alternative Project.
Right.
What do I know? I'm just new here. Or this is another great one. He's got two hats. Bruce Krebs, who's the financial officer for the managing board, and he's also, I've heard by rumor, one of the most successful recyclers on the island. I have heard a rumor that he and Sheila are down to one garbage can a month. Now, I'm going to see if that's a true rumor. I don't know. It's a rumor, folks.
Well, I've heard even wilder rumors that it's two cans a year, and that just makes Bruce smile and say, well, I'd like to get to that point.
But. Yeah, well, it should be really interesting. Like, what do they do? What are their tricks? What are their secrets? He's got them in two places. One, he's a wizard with finances and with human resources, as is Paige, which is a really important and big part of their job, which has to do with managing 50 to 70 volunteers and two staff people, and all as volunteers. So he's a part of that team. And
well, don't forget, you're listening to the voice of the volunteer coordinator for all 80 to 100 of those volunteers in Carol Steckler, who does a great job at running that show. And I want to just put one more request out for volunteers while we're talking about them.
Absolutely.
We need you. And all we ask is that you sign up for 1 2-hour shift per month. If you can do more,
that would be great. And, you know, I just have to close by saying every night we have a gratitude circle at our table. And one of the gratitudes I always say, because I do shifts at the dump as well as just like every volunteer, how else would I know what volunteers' lives are like? I say, I am so grateful for meaningful work, and I invite you into that and to share that gratitude for meaningful work. It is such meaningful work for Lopez, for all of the people in this country, and for the world. If one shining star of a place that is managing their own waste. We're it. I think I'm going to close off now. I was going to play a little bit of trash music. I don't have too much time, but let me see what I can do here. I'm not even used to this. Okay. Here we go.
Mr. Thompson calls the waiter, orders steak and baked potatoes.
Oh, it's starting over. You're going to hear a little bit of the beginning. I'm going to close it out with this.
The boy comes and takes it, with a cough contaminates it.
More next month, next week, same time, same station.
Thanks for having me, Carol.